This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
So yesterday, about midway through the Astros game, as they started to bring in the bench guys, I'm like, man, this is I like this a lot more than I did a couple years ago. Like this Bryce Matthews, I hear he's got a shot at being something pretty soon.
Yeah.
This Cam Smith. Whoa.
Yeah.
Big strapping young fella.
Uh-huh.
I'm enjoying watching him. Forrest Whitley. He's been
that young
forever.
Whippersnapper.
Yeah, yeah.
He still looks young. I think he's 37.
He's not 37.
I know he is.
It feels like him, for sure.
He's at least 37 years old, or I'm a mallard duck.
It is crazy, though. Like, that's a... He's a first-round pick.
Yeah.
I wonder what the longest time frame is for a first-round pick of a team. And I know he pitched briefly last year in the majors.
Yeah.
So it's what I'm about to say stands. Let's use last year as the benchmark. That's 8 years. He was their first-round pick in 2016.
He is only...
Is that the longest it's taken a first-round pick to get to the majors with the team that drafted them?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Like if he had to make an actual...
Like to go through the minor league system. Yeah.
He's actually only... Guess his age, actually. Because he's been around forever, but remember he was...
Don't tell me.
Okay.
He was drafted in 2016, so I'm going to guess he was 18.
Yeah.
So he's 27.
Yeah, he's 27.
27.
But it does feel like he should be 37. Because when a guy gets drafted and as highly as regarded as he was, you're expecting, like, when does he get his first Cy Young? Probably 2018, 2019 or so. You know, it's been a while.
I don't care if he's like a just like a setup guy or he's a guy to eat innings in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
It's a pretty incredible story.
Mm-hmm.
He's been through multiple surgeries and things like
he's
that.
He's a nice kid. You know, and I shouldn't be calling him a kid anymore, but he's not a major league ball player.
You still have a little bit of a glitch with Forrest Whitley, I think.
You do? I guess part of it is that I'm just amazed that they just continue to keep running it back with him. The big one was in the COVID year. When he didn't come back in shape.
Yep.
That was the big one.
Yeah.
Like what the hell? Why is this guy who's supposed to desperately trying to prove that he belongs in professional sports? How is this the guy that comes back out of shape?
Immaturity issues,
yeah.
For sure.
Brett Strom. Remember, I was angry because in the article about it, it was buried midway through the article I was reading. This quote from Brent Strom that just simply said, "I don't know why he didn't come back in shape."
And right.
That seems like a big deal. Why are people not angry? And then I got angry that people weren't angry about it.
Right. Next level.
Yeah.
So yesterday was fun with some of the young guys, some of the new guys in town. They're going to play actual big roles with this team. The big story was Cam Smith, who has potential to be the crown jewel of the Kyle Tucker trade. You know, Paredes, good player. Wisniewski, we'll see what he is. Cam Smith is a first-round pick who looks the part.
Yeah.
Who's got all sorts of tools, all sorts of power, and we saw it on display yesterday. Two home runs. Here's Cam Smith. Adam Spillane caught up with Cam Smith after the game in the clubhouse. He said, hitting two bombs, cool.
I can't even describe it. but it feels like the best feeling in the world. It's a blessing just to get opportunities to get in there, whether you're starting the game, whether you're getting the back half of the game. It's just to see that caliber of pitching this early, it's huge as a ball player.
All right. So Cam Smith, a couple of bombs. The first one was a no doubt. The second one was one that got kind of caught in one of those West Palm Beach breezes.
Yeah.
And carried into the stands, which, you know, look, for 95% of the other players, it gets caught up in the breeze and gets caught on the warning track. That's part of having power, is the ones that get caught up in the wind might wind up in the stands.
There have been some comparisons to Carlos Correa with his swing, and I think physically he's physically more impressive looking than Carlos Correa.
Definitely at that stage of his career.
Yeah.
Like early
oh,
on,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
You know, but, of course, he's 22. Carlos was 18 when he came up.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. Was, but yeah. They're, I like Cam Smith looks more like a football player.
Absolutely.
He looks like he could be playing tight end.
Yes.
Or wide receiver.
Yes.
He's put together really, really well.
Yep.
And he's toolsy and all of that. I talked to Brian McTaggart a little bit about one of my concerns about Cam Smith yesterday, which was that in an article with, I think it was in a McTaggart article, Cam Smith said that his hero is Yasiel Puig, which I told Brian that it felt a little bit like when C.J. Stroud said that Deshaun Watson was one of his mentors.
Yeah,
that was during the combine a couple years ago when C.J.
After
said
everything.
That. Yeah. Okay, let's embrace the positives of Yasiel Puig, the energy, the passion,
sure, the
all
energy.
Of that. But less bat licking. I don't want any bat licking.
Was Yasiel Puig swarmy? I don't think he was. I think he might have been swarmy.
I don't know. I think there's a certain consistency. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, energy wise,
he was untamed swarminess.
Yeah.
No, but it seems like all of the energy stuff is really, really good with Cam Smith.
Yeah.
He
definitely would have tried to decapitate Trevor Lawrence for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting my sports mixed up. Cam Smith grew up about 20 minutes from here.
Yeah.
And, or at least 20 minutes from Cacti Park.
Yeah.
And he's staying at home
yep.
during training camp. And this is his first spring training, remember? He was in college this time last year.
That's right.
He was submitting book reports and stuff.
Yeah,
and now
sure.
Now he's in a major league ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah. Here was Cam Smith talking about that. Playing at home has made it easier.
The big thing for me was being home. That's a huge part. I'm living with my parents, so this transition was pretty, not easy, but a lot easier than it would have been, you know, going to another team. So that helped out a lot. These guys welcomed me with open arms. There's no bad blood. They're just like, you're family now. So it's good energy around me. So it made it easier.
So we have the unique opportunity here, Seth, for the audience to not only give our in-person scouting report on Cam Smith,
yeah.
which one game in for the two of us here is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Two home runs. We also have the unique opportunity to give the scouting report on Cam Smith's family, of which he speaks right there.
Right, right, yeah. Because we were walking, when we were leaving the ballpark, the four of us were walking out to our car
yeah.
past that huge Astros sign at the front of the ballpark.
Big logo.
Yeah,
there.
Big
it's like
logo.
50 feet high.
Great Instagram opportunity.
Yes, big time.
And you and I, we were all walking, talking, and there were three women taking a picture in front of it, and they were trying to take a selfie, and I heard one of them say, "My arms aren't long enough."
Yeah.
And I said, Hey, little ladies. I didn't say that. Hey, I can help you out. You want me to take a picture? I've got long arms. And I took a picture of them. And then I did take a selfie with them.
You did?
With my long arms.
And you were complaining about the sun being in your eyes.
Yeah, they were
big
really.
Baby.
And then one of them,
yeah.
I think it was hot.
It was the friend.
It was the friend.
Yeah.
The friend was like kind of calling me a Sally for complaining about the sun in my eyes.
We say the friend, but people don't know who the
yeah,
friend
right.
of.
So,
yeah.
Well, because at this point we still didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
And we were kind of laughing and joking. They were wearing Astros gear. And then one of them said, this is Cam Smith's mom.
Yeah.
And so we met Cam Smith's mom, and it was really, really great.
She was delightful.
I love seeing the parents of players either at training camp with the Texans or in that moment after her son just had a huge moment. And we had a great time. We talked to them for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they were awesome.
It was Cam Smith's mom.
Yep.
Cam Smith's, I think she said aunt, but it felt like a family
great
friend.
Aunt.
Yeah. Well, and then the grandmother, like the grandmother was the
older
right
lady.
Next to
the other one was a family. Anyway, there was a family friend, and then there was either the grandmother or the great aunt.
Yeah, I guess that was grandmother. Yeah, I thought grandmother, but whatever. An older lady.
The older lady was. She, by the way, was a Cubs fan.
Yes.
So
the older lady. Yeah.
So her grandson or whoever, whatever the relation was, Cam Smith had been on her team.
Yeah.
But she saw a pretty good debut for the Astros.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now the interesting part. Was Cam Smith's mom asking, like, hey, because we told her what we did.
Yeah.
After about 2 minutes, we disclosed, hey, we're media members.
Yeah.
We should let you know. Full disclosure. And she seemed like a little bit concerned about how that trade was being viewed by Astro fans. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I know you and I are really excited about him.
They were worried that Cam Smith himself was not liked by Astros fans.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that's the evil of Twitter. Is that
she brought that up.
Yeah, and this isn't an Elon Musk cake. This is how Twitter's been for like 15 years. They funnel the negativity right towards you.
Yeah.
And whatever minority of fans out there were lashing out at Cam Smith somehow I assured her, no, I don't think there's – I haven't met anybody that, like, has any vitriol at all for Cam Smith, including before these two home runs. They might not have liked the trade or whatever. And I assured her, listen, don't worry about it. This is how sports works.
Yes.
People are going to hate Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman within 3 months. So you have nothing to worry about. Everything's going to be cool.
This is exactly how the conversation went at the outset on that topic. She said, I'm worried that the Astro fans are not that happy about this trade. And you said, well, why do you think that?
Yeah.
And she said, the things I'm seeing on Twitter, to which you said, F Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
To her.
Yeah.
And
I didn't censor myself.
I thought that talked her off the ledge a little bit. She seemed, she laughed and she seemed a little more comfortable.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good. Yeah. It's hard, man. It's hard with social media and the families. Like, Steve Smith Sr.'s kids for the rest of their lives, they're just going to be randomly scrolling through their feeds, and something's going to come up about their dad.
If you're his kids, you cannot unsee those texts.
No.
Ugh. Brutal.
Did his counterpart in that whole scenario, did she have kids?
The couple, I don't think so. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That'd be rougher.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh.
I'd rather see it about my dad than my mom.
Okay, yeah.
Call me a sexist, if you will, but I just...
we're a little in the weeds now. Cam Smith, big day yesterday, 2 home runs. Here was Joe Espada after the game on Cam Smith.
It doesn't look like he's the first spring training camp, you know, and he's walking into an organization that has had a lot of success, and he feels like... he can be part of this, and he can be part of our success, and he's excited to be in here. You just see how he goes about his work every day. He's I've been very impressed. So I know he's early in camp, but that's what you're looking for in young players that have the ability to do special things. Come in, you know, swinging the bat, and that's pretty cool, man.
You know what's interesting about that with Espada is Espada feels like he's trying to dial himself back a little bit on Cam Smith. You recall Espada, I forget where it was, if it was at the Fan Fest or if it was at some event within the last week or two, and he had that quote about Cam Smith where he said he's got the potential to carry your team.
Yeah.
He was effusive in his praise about Cam Smith. I wonder if Espada maybe hurt himself or got wind of the reaction to that cut and kind of tamped it back. I mean, dude just hit 2 home runs
in
spring training, and he's like, yeah, you know.
Honestly, the way they've been talking about it is it's at a different level than they typically talk about any prospect. Just I think there's probably alongside that, hopefully, a level of maybe maturity or professionalism, which is, and he's a college kid, so he's a lot older than a high school kid coming out, that maybe they just feel comfortable. It hasn't felt like Dana Brown, when he's speaking positively about Cam Smith, is trying to justify the trade or anything like that.
Yeah.
It all seems very genuine. And to juxtapose the 2014-15 era Astros with today's Astros and how things feel so different. I mean, Carlos Correa had 3 years in the minors and then on into 2015, where it was one of those promises that you didn't even really necessarily know how much to believe and how much would it matter because this team's no good anyway. Whereas this has been, this has been on rocket fuel in terms of the timeline.
Oh yeah,
the from the trade to all of a sudden, like, wait a second, oh wow, the, this there's a chance he could play in the majors this year. It's a lot. I'm enjoying this a lot more than I enjoyed 2014.
I am.
I'll tell you that much.
No, he could. Yeah. He could find a spot on what is actually a legitimately good baseball team.
Anytime if you're an Astros fan that's distraught over the fact that there's a somewhat of a reset going on here, just remember what it was like in 2014.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, man. That was a reset.
That was rough.
Yeah. Forrest Whitley, we talked about him. We're reacting to things we liked yesterday. Cam Smith was the big one. Looking forward to seeing him again today. Forrest Whitley, clean inning, couple of strikeouts, looked really solid, which is important because the bullpen right now, there's a lot of mystery with the bullpen going on right now. You know it's Hader at the back end. You know it's Abreu as a setup guy. Taylor Scott got in and did some decent things yesterday. Put a couple guys on base, but got out of it. But Forrest Whitley, 1-2-3 inning with a couple strikeouts. That was good. Christian Walker, our first chance to see him. His Astro debut yesterday.
Yeah.
Had a double off the center field wall.
Over the head of Jose Siri.
Yeah.
Hard
to
do.
Not easy.
Jose Siri's got some range out there.
Had a walk.
He's like Jake Myers.
Yep. Had a walk. Christian Walker did. Had a chance to make a couple plays in the field. I was a little disappointed. A couple diving plays. I'm like, I hear this guy's a three-time Gold Glover.
Defensively, I was, you know, Paredes had a chance at a foul ball that would have been really tough. It was like directly over his head, and I don't think that it's not one that I thought, oh, Bregman certainly would have made that. Christian Walker had a chance to make some plays and didn't, but definitely was made. Had more of a chance than Jose Abreu.
Yeah,
that's what I'll say about that.
Yes, he at least dove.
And then since also, because I know you don't have him in the rundown in right this spot. Okay, the new body type of John Singleton. For one, yeah, meets the eyeball test. The guy looks trim and muscular and fit and all of that.
You can actually tell through a baseball uniform.
Yeah. And we didn't see it do anything for him at the plate, but at first base, he made a couple of athletic plays that I'm not so sure he would have made last year.
He's nimble.
And if he had made them, they wouldn't have looked nearly as good.
No.
I mean, he did his part in turning a double play. They weren't able to turn it. Then he made another play where he had to dive to his left, I believe. And those were within a few at-bats of each other. I think he definitely looks different athletically.
He does. No, Singleton should be on this list here for sure. Here was Christian Walker after the game. Adam Spillane caught up with him. This was an interesting cut. The biggest challenge of these spring training games.
Just the mental capacity of staying locked in for 2.5-3 hours. Even now with the workouts, it's like, you know, 15-20 minutes of work and then you get a few minutes off. So getting back into the game where, you know, I only played maybe 4 innings or so, but, you know, just staying tuned in for an hour and a half is a good challenge, and you just slowly build that. So, I would say just getting used to staying locked in for the length of 9 innings.
I've never heard a cut like that before.
I was surprised that you were surprised by that.
Surprised he's that open about it.
Yeah, that he was open about it, I guess. Yeah. No, that's definitely
just
a real thing.
Staying focused for 90 minutes.
No, you know, in football it's like that. And one thing that used to bother me is the way some teams operate even is in training camp, you're taking all these reps where it's 4 reps at a time, 5 reps at a time. And I never felt like it got you in football shape. Because all of a sudden, week one, you're in a 12-play drive, and you haven't felt that kind of fatigue yet. So that's physiological. But in baseball, yeah, you got to stay dialed in on both sides of the ball for 3 hours. That's a long time, man.
It makes sense. It's just I was surprised. That's one of those things as a fan. I can see fans reacting. Like, you get paid $20 million a year.
You can't pay attention?
Is pay attention
it's
for 90
It's a different
minutes.
Level of focus than the normal person is handling
Which
in their daily life.
Which those of us on the outside are not aware of. Yeah, for sure.
Are you worried that Christian Walker has attention span difficulties?
No, I'm zero worried about Christian Walker's attention span. I don't know if he's going to make the team, but boy, this Luis Guillorme cat yesterday, I was enjoying him. He does not look like an athlete at all. He's got a big, gigantic. He looks like a hefty version of Jose Urquidy with his big beard and everything. And he was out there making some smooth moves at shortstop yesterday.
Yeah.
That was cool. He had an RBI single. Early on in the game, before Cam Smith started hitting bombs, he was the only one driving in normal runs. Other than that, they needed errors. They needed Chaz to get beamed with the bases loaded. Guillermo's up there, professional at bat, man. Just serves it right out into left center field, drives home a run.
And it's a fun name to say.
Guillaume.
Yeah, so that basis alone, I would like him to make the squad.
We'll see. We'll see. Hayden Wisniewski. What did you think of Hayden Wisniewski yesterday?
I thought he was fine. He let up the solo home run, but I was biased, though, too, because I watched him warm up in the bullpen. So I was I grew
emotionally. Did that make you biased?
I grew emotionally attached
to
him. He's a Houston kid.
Yeah.
He has a house in Houston, so yeah, he talked about how that'll be nice to be able to just.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm watching it, and I'm totally thinking, like, oh, yeah, you could totally Garrett Cole this dude. Yep.
Through the car wash?
Garrett Cole was different because he had that one really good year in Pittsburgh, but
yeah,
then
kind of,
but then fell off.
Yes.
He hadn't been the same guy. Mm-hmm. And so he was a reclamation project in some respects.
Yes.
Charlie Morton's a better example.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay, you got a different version of him in the Astros he'd ever had before. So he could very possibly be one of those Astros car wash guys.
Wisniewski gave up the home run in two innings. He struck out three guys. The only thing I didn't like is his first inning in there. He got the first two guys out. He was 0-2 on the third guy. And then he gave up the home run.
Yeah.
Like, he let it was Beatty, I think. The guy who got the SUV from Soto for giving him his number.
Oh, Beatty. That's right, yeah.
He worked him back to 3-2 and then hit a home run. I didn't like that. Gave up a little bit of hard contact. Whatever. Overall, I was pretty happy with it. Here is Wisniewski after the game explaining what he was working on.
The curveball today. We threw a few of those, and it's been okay. It's a new pitch. Looked okay, though. Felt okay about it. Changeup is what I wanted to work on the second inning. And threw him for strikes. Probably not ideal spots, but hey, we're working on it. So other than that, the slider was struggled with the slider today, but we found it in the second inning, and it was good to be back out there.
That's classic spring training explanation.
Oh,
I'm all for it. He's a pro's pro.
Yep.
But it is true.
I heard some talking head saying I got up 0-2 on the third out right there, and I gave up a home run. He didn't know I was working on my slider.
It really is, though. I know that people get tired of hearing it, and they feel like it's an excuse, but they really are. Pitchers are going out there working on pitches, and it's not always going to go awesome when you're working on a pitch, obviously, and there's a reason you're working on it, that it's not your best stuff,
yeah.
And you're not game planning for the specific batters and everything. So I try to make it more, with the pitchers, I try to make it more of an eyeball thing. Like, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, this looks right.
All right, stuff we hated, just real quickly here. Tell me if there's any overreaction here. Chaz McCormick, Jake Myers, both looked as overwhelmed at home plate, or not at home plate, but in the batter's box yesterday as they did all season last year.
No, it's not an overreaction. I mean, yes, it's an overreaction based on
one game,
except this is an extension of something that's been going on a long time.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
These are the two guys that are being gift-wrapped these jobs right now.
Right. You know what? You can't fall into that trap where you do with, like, Jose Abreu, where people 2 weeks into last year would say, hey, it's just 2 weeks. No, you have to go back through all of last season. This is an extension.
Oh, yeah.
Including when Jose Abreu actually did good things in September and October, but it was still an extension of a bad product.
Yeah.
So it's okay to it's okay to overreact to that, which means it's not an overreaction. That was the appropriate reaction.
I don't know that there's a point as a Houston sports fan. Like, what are the things that make us most irrational and angry, like, in the moment? Like, Laremy Tunsil getting a false start. I get very angry at that. I don't know that there's anything that makes me more angry in Houston sports than a Jake Myers at-bat. Because they end with strikeouts so very often. Like, he has so many uncompetitive at-bats, Jake Myers. And that he is the anointed center fielder, and has been, really. Like, Jake Myers has been on this team for a long time now.
Yeah.
Like, he goes back to 2021.
Yeah.
This is fifth year.
Oh, and it's crazy. And I know this is just managers get asked about different things, so it's not. But it bothers me that there's a quote out there about how Chaz McCormick's going to have a shorter leash. When Jake Myers, I don't have that same quote about you. I need a quote about Jake Myers having an extremely short leash. The problem is that with Altuve playing in left field, they really want to have Jake Myers' range out there in center field.
Yeah, obviously, they've got the numbers in the building over there that say having his glove out there is worth whatever drop-off you're getting, like precipitous drop-off you're getting offensively from him, I guess, like the trade-off of the two things. I hate watching him hit. And the look on his face on the little graphic up on the Jumbotron with his hat that doesn't fit, his gigantic hat, his Bobby Slowick hat. All right.
No, that's not an overreaction. You're good.
Renell Blanco yesterday.
Oh, that overreaction.
You laid eyes on
Blanco.
You laid eyes on an angry Renell Blanco after
his
outing.
Oh, and because I was watching the bullpen, and Blanco came in and he looked.
It's the type of insight that only we can give, Seth.
He looked genuinely upset. So now who knows? Maybe that's his resting Blanco face. But he looked genuinely upset. And when he went into the dugout in the bullpen, a couple guys were giving him consolation daps and stuff. And he looked like he was upset with himself.
One and a third.
It's not like he just lost the World Series or
anything. No, but he gave up a lot of hard contact yesterday. Yeah. One and a third, two runs, an absolute monster bomb to Jose Siri, which was fun to watch him sashay out of the batter's box to run down to first base and
around the bases. Asuna got onto third by way of a Victor Caratini error when he tried to throw out Asuna, stealing second. So it wasn't as bad as the box score looks necessarily, but it wasn't great.
No, wasn't great. All right. Speaking of Charlie Morton, this was good. Charlie Morton was on A.J. Pierzynski's podcast, I guess yesterday or earlier this week, and told a great Game 7 game day story from back in 2017. You guys remember Game 7 of the 2017 World Series, don't you?
Yes. So Pierzynski asked him, what had A.J. Hinch told you about whether or not you were going to pitch on that day, because you all recall Charlie Morton came in relief and finished the last four innings of the game.
I'm looking at Lance. I'm like, dude, this dude's about to start Game 7 of the World Series. Like, what is going through his mind right now? And AJ, I remember, came up to me at the park, because I'm like carefree. I pitched pretty well in Game 4. We lost, but like I pitched well. I'm like, man, I'm available. I know it. But that's not my thing. Like, my thing isn't coming out of the bullpen. Like, the chances I'm going to pitch coming out of the bullpen, probably not great. So, like, I'm kind of like, all right, I'm all set. I'm good. And AJ comes up and he's like, we're going to get you in there. He's like, I don't know, maybe in the middle, maybe in the end. I don't know. We'll see. And then that's the only thing that I remember AJ ever talking to me about.
I mean, that's crazy. He went from just kind of thinking he was going to be a spectator that day to pitch
in the last four innings.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, I mean, at first he had to mentally adjust to, I'm probably going to play today. And then he wouldn't have known until he got in that he was going to pitch the final four innings.
It was probably harder to find out, like, oh, wow, I might pitch, than to actually go in and pitch the four innings. Because once you're in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but maybe AJ Hinch didn't know it was going to go four innings. You just ride him, you ride him until there's your reason to take him out.
It was on 3 days rest, too, and that was another reason he wouldn't have started the game, because he had pitched well in Game 4, but it was on 3 days rest. And one of the other tidbits he had in there was that, Hinch figured, okay, I don't know if Lance, I don't want Lance Lance is so fired up all the time that him sitting around in the bullpen for four, five, six innings might not be the best thing. So they just went out and started him. Lance came out, and remember Lance was just aggressive as hell. He hit four guys. But it was intentional. Like, he was brushing him back off the plate. He wanted to own the plate.
He didn't give up any runs.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was,
He had 2 1/3 innings, 3 hits. 4 beamed batters, 4 hit-by-pitch, and 3 strikeouts for Lance in that game. It's a wild-looking box score, man. Lance, he got 2 1/3 out of him. Peacock came in and gave you a couple good innings. This is a trip down memory lane. Francisco Liriano got you an out. Chris Devensky, who pitched yesterday for the Mets, got you an out in that game. That's fun. And then Charlie Morton, the hammer, man, four innings.
One thing that you remember from that series is how annoying it was, because both teams were hyper-paranoid and there were so many stoppages for catchers to go out
change
and
consult signs.
With pitchers and change signs and catchers getting crossed up.
Oh, the game
all
took 5 hours.
I'm not sure why either team was so paranoid, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. What's your problem? Dodgers and everybody else?
There was that series. Was the mound visit limitation put in the next year?
Yes.
Or because of that, basically? That in the playoffs that year, everybody was super paranoid.
Yeah.
Including the Astros. They were paranoid about other teams.
That was fun, dude. I love reliving anything having to do with that 2017 World Series championship team. That was fun. Combine going on right now in Indianapolis. We'll get into some more D'Amico Ryans. We heard from D'Amico a little earlier in the show. We'll get to some more D'Amico a little later on in the show. But there's some big storylines going on at the Combine right now. Some of the GMs and coaches met with the media yesterday. Nick Caserio meets with the media today at 12:15 Central Time. Here was Eric DaCosta, the general manager of the Baltimore Ravens. He was asked about the Justin Tucker situation. For those who are unfamiliar, Justin Tucker, kicker for the Ravens, is in a bit of a pickle right now. 16 accusers in different massage therapy, professional massage therapy settings. We're talking about commercial, like, spas in a strip mall type places that have accused massage therapists. 16 of them have accused Justin Tucker of misconduct in those massage settings. We've been down this road before with a certain quarterback. Here's Eric DaCosta, the Ravens GM, on where things stand with Justin Tucker.
Well, I think a lot goes into that. First of all, good question. Appreciate the question. The allegations are serious, concerning. The amount of allegations are serious and concerning. I think we're fortunate that the league is doing an investigation. We'll wait as patiently as we can for as much information as we can, and we'll make our decisions based on that.
Okay. Yeah. So there's no "we'll stand by Justin Tucker." There's none of that in there.
No,
it's,
no.
It's they are.
I wonder, though, if
I think he's going to.
If they're doing their own internal investigation, this one seems. And look, and these things are always murkier than they might seem on the surface, I know. It just seems like it's almost cut and dry. As cut and dry as it can be in what is it's a murky legal area, and there's always a whole lot of he said, she said. But the volume of complaints and the establishments where the complaints were made and apparently some internal documentation of massage therapists complaining about it to their company at the time.
And booted from two places.
Yeah, getting a banned from a couple places that I'd honestly... If I were a Ravens fan, I might be like, okay, guys, what are we doing here? Like, what are we really doing here? Like, why are you waiting for the league to make their decision?
I think he's going to get cut.
Yeah.
I think he's going to get released by the Ravens eventually. I'm just reading all the tea leaves that the rest of us have looked at, and I'm looking at it through like a handicapper's lens. Like, if I had to bet on this, I would bet he's gone. But that's
how many DMs have you gotten demanding that the Texans pick up Justin Tucker since Kaimi Fairbairn had such a rough end of the year? Zero.
Zero. Right.
I've gotten
now.
Zero so far.
I've gotten zero. Yeah.
Remember, Justin Tucker wasn't good last year either.
He was not. Yeah, Kaimi was better than
Justin.
Justin
went with Ray Rice. This scandal is happening when he might be at the tail end of his career, and it's a lot easier for teams to. Do the right thing when you're not a good football player anymore.
Here's Adam Schefter. He did an interview yesterday. This is one of the McAfee guys. Did an interview with him and said the one thing he is certain about in this upcoming draft.
The thing that I feel most comfortable and confident in this upcoming draft is that the Cleveland Browns at number two will wind up taking a quarterback because they have to. Because logic dictates that, because common sense dictates that, because they have Deshaun Watson, who you don't even know is going to be able to play again in the upcoming season, hurt, having undergone another surgery on his torn Achilles. You have all the money invested in him. So you need financial relief and you need a quarterback. And the only way to do that is to be able to do it at number two.
That's got to be the team that feel like the team, the fan base that's the most beaten down in the NFL right now has to be the Browns, right?
Hey, oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. That's a tough competition.
I get it. There's a lot of bad teams.
I think even like the Raiders have at least hope with a new coach.
They don't have $170 million in cap dollars being eaten up by a quarterback who's never going to play for them.
Yeah. No, you're probably
and all
right
the, and all the baggage.
Just by the way, to quote Adam Schefter from April 11th, 2023.
Okay.
I don't think it's a lock that Houston is going QB at number two overall. Mm. So, yeah, take everything with a grain of salt from Nugget Hussy Adam Schefter.
That was the best. It was yesterday, Schefter, that cut getting out there, and then, like, Field Yates, co-worker of Adam Schefter. Well, I know what I'm doing in all my mock drafts now.
Oh! You
know? Field Yates.
Oh, the jock holding.
Oh, my God, yeah. They do need a quarterback. That is true.
They do need a quarterback, but this is a horrible year to take a swing on a quarterback at number two. Just because you need a quarterback.
Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, and those are the top two. And everything I've seen from all the scouts and everything, and what I've watched with my own eyes, I don't know that those two, compared to the six that went in the top 12 last year,
right?
I don't know that they're. If you take the six that were drafted in the top 12 last year, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May were 1, 2, and 3. Then you had Michael Penix at 8. You had J.J. McCarthy at 10 or 11. And then Bo Nix went at 12, which is a little surprising, but he had a really good rookie year.
Yeah.
I don't know that Shadur and Cam Ward crack that six, if not the top five.
I am all for taking as many swings at the plate as you can to get a quarterback. The problem is when you're doing it, like the way Schefter, this is why Schefter, it annoys me that Schefter said the logic tells you this, what they do. Yeah. Okay, well then by that logic, then he said you should take a quarterback. Like, all right, how about a quarterback that you feel good about at least? Because with the number two pick overall, you've also got a really good chance at getting a really good football player that could help your team out for the next decade.
Yep.
So just taking a quarterback because his position name is quarterback doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you don't feel good about him. By all means, take a quarterback later in the trade back. Take a quarterback in the second round. Keep taking swings at the plate. But when you've got an opportunity to get a Will Anderson type on your football team, or a Derek Stingley type on your football team, you're doing your team a great disservice just to simply take a position rather than a specific prospect that you feel good about.
Which for this year would be, you know, the Browns are picking second behind the Titans. This year would be like Abdul Carter would be the Will Anderson in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Travis Hunter would be the Stingley in this case. And yeah, like that's a good point. Imagine if, because chances are if you're Cleveland, you're going to be bad again next year. You got your own first round picks again. So that's kind of nice. You didn't have that for a few years because of the Deshaun trade. Imagine if the Texans back in 2022 decided to take Kenny Pickett with a third overall pick. He was the only first-round quarterback taken. He got taken at 20. You know, imagine if they decided to reach at quarterback instead of taking Derek Stingley Jr. Because you need a quarterback.
Yeah.
Got to have a quarterback.
Well, no, and especially the idea of tanking to get your really, really good quarterback, it just doesn't make the sense that it once did. There's just way too many opportunities and ways you can get a good quarterback on your team, either at lower draft positions or via trade. Veteran quarterbacks are getting traded more than they ever have. That I don't like the idea of wasting. I think the pendulum has swung back to where teams and people are realizing that, yes, quarterback is the most valuable position in sports, but teams that just desperately reach for it end up more times than not getting really pinched for it.
Yep. We'll do a mock draft injection here in just a few minutes. Text message. We haven't touched on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line yet today. Can you imagine Shadur Sanders in Cleveland? I said this to Seth last night. I think it was when we were at the grocery store.
Yeah.
We went to the grocery store, and for some reason, I don't know why, I had the draft on my brain. But I said, I want one of two things. I want Shadur Sanders either to go number two to Cleveland, or I want him to go 40th. I don't want anything in between. I don't like if he goes to the Raiders at six, yay. If he goes to the Jets at seven, whoopee. I need him to go to Cleveland at two, or I need him to be sitting in the green room for the entirety of night one of the draft.
What about the Giants, though? I guess, do you think he'd probably be happy to at least be going to a huge market?
He'd love to go to New York. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you're getting drafted high.
You're going to go to a miserable organization.
But they're all miserable up that high. You know what I mean? Like, he knows, and his dad knows. His dad was the third overall pick or whatever. You're going to go to a bad team. But if you can go to a bad team where there's some sizzle, like New York and Vegas, I feel like, look, Colorado was a bad team until they got there in college. You know what I mean? But Cleveland is miserably bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cleveland is these other teams you get drafted to, and at least they've got cap space and picks, and they're not, you know, their best player. Max Crosby is not asking for a trade in Vegas like Myles Garrett is in Cleveland. You know what I mean? Cleveland is a next level dysfunctional, bad, and damaged, and in horrible because of their cap situation. And if they trade Myles Garrett, their cap gets even worse.
Yeah.
They have so much dead money associated with him if they were to move him. So I need. Plus, Cleveland is miserable. It's not New York or Vegas. It's a miserable place. So I need Shadur to go to Cleveland, or I need him to be the guy sitting there, Aaron Rodgers style, in the green room all night.
Boy.
That's my big draft wish.
Shadur Sanders and Deshaun Watson in that relationship or whatever might be said about it. I almost want it just for that.
Yes.
I just want for sure.
Like, yes.
Whatever Shadur might say about Deshaun Watson.
Oh, my God. And he wouldn't hold back either.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. Are you with me on this?
I'm with you on this.
All right,
we're
good.
Aligned.
We're aligned.
I'm on board, Coach.
Thanks. All right. You can text the show, 713-572-4610. Man, a lot of good stuff to get into. This is a fun week. All right. Mock draft injection time. The OG of the mock draft is Mel Kiper Jr., and he has his second mock draft out. We will dig into Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft. Who does he have the Texans taking at 25, and do we agree with him? We will check out Mel Kiper's mock draft and the mock draft injection coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Fendergast.
All right. Apologies for the long break there. But Ben, back in the studio in Houston, apparently was dealing with a potential towering inferno.
Yeah, that was
a fire alarm back at home base.
You know my feeling on this is that we weren't there, so I let him burn. But apparently it turned out it was no big deal.
Yeah.
You said the same thing.
But you just don't
have the guts to say it on the microphone.
That's 100% true.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the mock draft injection. Payne and Pendergast with you. We're live in West Palm Beach, headed out to Astros Nationals today. We'll get to some more Astros talk here in just a little bit. Things that we saw out there yesterday in the win over the Mets. But first, it is mock draft season. It's combine season. We'll hear from Nick Caserio today. We've got some more D'Amico Ryans that we will get to in just a little bit. Mel Kiper Jr., who many see Seth as the godfather of this format. It's a dead heat between Mel Kiper Jr. and the late Joel Buschbaum when it comes to draft expert analysis going way, way back decades here. So Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN, has his latest mock draft out. And let's get right to it with the 25th pick. In the Mel Kiper Jr. mock draft, ESPN.com, the Houston Texans select Kelvin Banks.
Ah.
O-line. Tackle at Texas. but some questions now arising over whether he'll be a tackle or a guard at the next level. We've now seen him twice, I think, in the last three or four times you and I have done this exercise.
Yeah.
Which I think is more noteworthy, not so much that the Texans are taking him, but where he's being taken in the drill. Like, he's a guy that a lot of people saw as a surefire top 10, top 12 pick.
Yeah.
And now here he is lurking in the 20s somewhere.
Yeah, so with a lot of these guys, too, when they start to work out at the combine, that's where we'll start to get a feel for exactly, all right, you know, every GM and scout tries to act like they don't care about the workout numbers that much, and then yet all of a sudden the guys that work out really well tend to get drafted a lot higher.
Yeah.
So they care, damn it. And with offensive linemen, it's harder to tell from the game film just how athletic they are necessarily, because you're not seeing them run at top end speed or you know other than on outside plays and when they're moving up to linebackers. You just can't tell as much, so the testing can matter for these guys. So I like that he's potentially versatile, because right now I think it's very fluid as to who's going to play guard and who's going to play tackle next year. I think that there's a chance that Titus Howard ends up being a full-time guard, but a lot of that depends on whether or not Blake Fisher comes along. If Kelvin Banks could come in and you want to put him at guard just to start and get comfortable with it, but
yeah,
there might be a chance for him to come out and compete at tackle at some point in the future. And I know ever since the days of Bill O'Brien, we really soured on versatility. But I think it's because Bill O'Brien was bad at identifying versatility. If you have genuinely versatile guys, especially these days where offensive linemen, it just feels like they get injured more than they used to. It can help a lot.
Bill O'Brien would categorize a guy as versatile if he just got on the field and played a position.
It was almost like if you did it. It's almost like, he's a surgeon. He performed my appendectomy. Like, what were his qualifications? He was holding a scalpel. Normally he's my tailor.
He's my butcher.
Yeah. But we put him in there, so now he's a surgeon.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, no, I'd prefer somebody that's actually good at doing all those versatile
things. Says you. O'Brien would be like, that's an amazing surgeon right there.
He's willing to do it.
It's a doctor. I want that guy. Yeah. So Kelvin Banks at 25th to the Texans. We've had a few people say, hey, guys, can you touch on what some of the other teams in the division are doing in this these drafts? Which is noteworthy because, yes, there's a team in the AFC South that actually has the first pick in the draft. And I think you could argue that they need a quarterback, right? I don't think Will Levis is the solution, but this is not viewed as a strong draft for quarterbacks. In this particular draft, Ben, have you got the sounder ready? With the first pick in the 2025 Mel Kiper ESPN.com mock draft, the Tennessee Titans select Abdul Carter, outside linebacker, Penn State,
okay,
who is really, really good.
Yeah, and the outside linebackers don't worry or concern me as much, depending on whether Blake Fisher's starting or not. Because Blake, I thought he showed a lot of promise, but he still played like a rookie in a lot of regards.
Oh, yeah.
So, in they drafted him, and I felt, and I think a lot of people felt, like he was probably a two-year project. So for him to play like a starter in year one would have been a bit of a surprise. But I think he can be on the right trajectory. But that would go back to that conversation about whether you have Titus Howard out there or Blake Fisher out there to start the year. The interesting thing about this is, if you want to do the sounder again, with the fifth pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars take Mason Graham, defensive tackle out of Michigan.
Yeah.
Which,
he's a good player.
The Texans, listen, if you listen to this program, you might have an inkling that we're a little bit concerned about the interior offensive line. Yeah. So I don't like seeing more stud interior defensive linemen go to divisional opponents.
No.
All right?
Yeah.
All right? They put us into a little pickle at times last year with that interior offensive line. You guys remember the name Quinnen Williams? You ever hear of him?
Yeah.
For the Jets? Yeah. How do you like to see him twice a year?
Yeah. He concussed our guy, man.
Have you looked at the headshot of Mason Graham?
There's
a huge disconnect between his headshot and his face and how he looks and like how he actually
plays
as a football player.
Yeah, I know, you're right.
He looks like a drunken frat boy.
Yes.
He does not look at all like a guy that should strike fear in your heart. And those are the most dangerous types.
Well, and five's about as low as I've seen him going in these mock drafts.
Yeah.
Like, he's viewed as, next to Carter, Carter, and depending on how you look at Travis Hunter,
you know,
if you look at him as a corner or a wide receiver, for what it's worth, he's at the combine this week and working out with the defensive backs. Travis Hunter is, so, but I would imagine that whatever team takes him, is going to have him. I don't know. What do you think? If you drafted Travis Hunter from Colorado, would you have him playing both ways at the NFL level?
No.
Not even like gimmick packages or anything?
No. You never. No. This always ends poorly when you try to do that right off the bat. Who was the player for the Browns a few years ago that was the big plan?
I don't remember.
Listen. No, because it's really, really hard to play a single position in the NFL. So it's always got to be that you bring him in and you see what he can do, and then you get him comfortable in his role. Mm-hmm. And then after he gets really good at that position on his side of the ball, then maybe you can experiment with something else. Adding gimmick, it just smacks of just trying to be too cute and too smart and too clever. And it just rarely works out well. So I also don't think, I don't think that you can put that kind of a workload on a rookie and expect them to stay healthy.
Yeah.
You know, in freaking baseball, Shohei Ohtani is doing something that nobody else does in baseball. And lo and behold, his body broke down.
Yeah. I'm not saying do it 120 snaps or anything. I'm saying, like, he's a difference maker on offense.
I think using him as a returner is as far as you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
At least in his rookie year.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast, we head into the 8 o'clock hour. This was a good topic I heard being discussed on the other shows. One bold move for the Texans, an ESPN writer put this out there. I have actually come around almost 180 on this particular move because of how the Texans might be able to recover on the back end. I will explain. I think this is a move that might be popular with Texan fans. We'll get to that coming up next.